Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is all business. Each of my guests will be discussing a business topic in his specialty. My first guest is a branding consultant for the digital age who was dismayed at the me-first attitude of many businesses before the Great Recession. He blends the need to do good with the need for profits and helps companies to do both. We'll look at the principles in his book, We First, and relate them to the Occupy Wall Street movement and other worldwide movements. My second guest is the CEO of a consultancy that helps companies interact with their customers and manage their businesses in the online economy. We'll discuss who really determines the success of a business from his book, Users Not Customers. My third guest is the back of the napkin consultant. He'll show us how images can determine what we do and when words don't work for us from his latest book, Blah Blah Blah. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. My first guest is a returning guest. Simon Mainwaring is a branding consultant, an author, a blogger, and a speaker. He's the founder and CEO of We First, a social branding consultancy that helps brands and creative companies use social media to reinvent their industries and our world. Prior to that, Simon was a former Nike creative at Wieden Kennedy in Portland and a worldwide creative director for Motorola at Ogilvy. He is a member of the advisory board at the Annenberg School, and he's an Ad Age Power 150, and he's also an expert blogger for Fast Company. Simon's latest book is titled We First. It was chosen by Amazon as one of the top 10 business books for 2011. He studied law and fine arts. He got first-class honors at the Sydney University. He now lives and works in Los Angeles, joining us from L.A. Hi, Simon. How are you today?
Hi, Bill. Thanks for that.
Well, thank you for being my guest, and welcome back to the show. First of all, I guess congratulations are in order by being selected an Amazon Best Business Book of the Year 2011. So congratulations to you for that.
Thank you very much. You never plan for these things when you go into writing a book. In fact, you probably know very little at all, so it was a nice surprise.
Well, a wonderful surprise and well-deserved. Now, getting into your book, We First, one of your cardinal principles is that companies must build a better world as they make profits, not something that they do after they make profits. So in what way does this sort of mindset fit in with the Occupy Wall Street movement that we see happening around the United States?
Thanks. I mean, there's two considerations here. One is brands cannot survive in societies that fail. And right now, the American economy is struggling to the point that the middle class is disappearing and our customer base is disappearing, in which case, from a business strategy point of view, brands need to step in, companies need to step in and help. Secondly, you know, this false separation between living and giving that's been going on for so long, you know, always discharging your responsibility to your shareholders, has meant that the contribution going to society at large has always been an afterthought or an extra, whatever's left over, and that hasn't proved to be sufficient. And the Occupy Wall Street movement is, you know, sometimes it's criticized because they don't have a clear agenda or they have so many agendas, but that is in fact indicative of the systemic problems that are a result of, you know, the way business has been practiced, particularly in the last, you know, probably from 2004 onwards, but even the decades prior. And so, you know, the fact that there was such an inequality of wealth, has affected people's health care. It's affected how people see the environment being treated. It affects, you know, jobs and housing. It affects how some people see the spending on various wars around the world. So, you know, the problem is so sort of systemic across the board. It's affecting all aspects of society. And when you consider Occupy Wall Street has now had protests in over 1,000 cities around the world in 87 countries, I think this is a large problem that needs to be addressed. And this is just one indication of how serious it's getting.
All right. And all of that makes great sense to me, Simon. But how can market forces be put to work for a better world and not just solely for attaining profit?
Well, the first thing is we have to be realistic. It's absolutely naive to think companies are going to turn around and suddenly want to do good. They still have to drive their bottom line. But the good news is social media, as we've seen in the Arab Spring revolutions, has given citizens a voice. And now, as we're seeing with Occupy Wall Street and so on, we're seeing it's giving consumers a voice, in which case brands are now in dialogue with their customers. And as such, they need to listen to what their customers want, and they need to be meaningful to their customers' lives if they want, you know, their customers to talk about them positively across social media channels. So with that context, the way business responds is they say, great, we're not going to do cause marketing or CSR initiatives after the fact. We're going to bring our for-profit purpose to life. We're going to identify our core values of our brand and bring that to life in a meaningful way. So that is a partnership approach to their relationship with customers. Secondly, they execute this through a concept called contributory consumption, which is a simple idea that a small proportion of the sale of any product or service goes towards a cause that's in alignment with those core values. So they not only get the PR effect and the goodwill of their customer base, but they reinforce their for-profit narrative at the same time, this storytelling that is essential to every brand. And then finally, brands should work together to address these larger issues like climate change. These issues are so large now that they're impacting the bottom line of business, and they're also impacting what the community of customers think about the brand. So there's three different ways that they can work together to help build a better world, but also, importantly, drive their bottom line.
My guest is Simon Mainwaring. We're talking about his latest book, We First, which was an Amazon Best Book of 2011. Simon, to illustrate your point, to make it clear for my listeners, use the example of Procter & Gamble after Hurricane Katrina. How did they integrate their brand in with their cause and elevate themselves both in the mind of consumers and non-consumers alike?
Well, I'll give you a couple of P&G examples, one of the largest brands in the world. And one example is, you know, they have the Tide brand, which is a washing powder we all know about. And they recognize the very human nature of the suffering that, you know, the victims went through. And so they wanted to address the issue of self-esteem. So they went down there, and as a function of, you know, the Tide brand, they created this Loads of Hope campaign in which they went down and allowed victims to wash their clothes, to actually kind of get their feet back underneath them again and to feel good about themselves so they can do the difficult work of rebuilding their lives. They've since gone on, for another example, is Pampers, one of the P&G brands, has partnered with UNICEF. And every time somebody buys a packet of Pampers, they generate a tetanus vaccination for a newborn or a mother in the developing world. And in the last 2 years, they have now funded 31 million vaccinations, tetanus vaccinations, saving an estimated 100,000 lives. And to my point earlier, you can see how there's such an alignment between the core values of the brand and the customers that buy Pampers and the fact that you can save the lives of a mother or newborn in the developing world.
Oh, those are great examples, Simon. Now, I want to challenge you on one of the things that you said in an earlier answer, however. You said that the problems, the societal problems, the ecological problems are so large that companies have to unite together to try to fight them and to combat them. And this gets into crossing or blurring of the lines between business and government. You know, things like air pollution, that is considered in the past, has always been considered a big government problem, and government steps in to fix that. How and why can companies, individual for-profit companies, step in and fill the gap where the government hasn't been able to be successful?
Well, I agree, and there's 3 points here. The first is that government is now riddled with historic debt. So no matter what they want to do, it's very, very difficult for them to achieve anything at scale. Secondly, there's gridlock due to partisan politics. So even if we were trying to get large issues addressed, it's very hard to get them done in a timely fashion. Thirdly, the companies themselves are part of the problem in the sense that they're having that negative impact in economic terms, those negative externalities on society. And it's not sufficient to just try and clean up the problem after the fact. We actually have to address the cause in a preventative way rather than just a remedial way. In which case, I'll give you a couple of concrete examples. Nike has opened up all its IP, its intellectual property, in and around how it makes its products, the rubber and glues that go into its shoes, through the Nike Green Exchange, and opened it up to all other companies who are doing the same, like Best Buy and Yahoo and so on, so they can work together to address climate change. We also see that they've just released the environmental design, an environmental design tool, which shows how they reduce the environmental impact of their supply chain, and they made that open to all their competitors. And then the final example I'd give you is the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, which has been led by Patagonia, which basically said, we want to hold all companies accountable to the same sustainability index to help address the environment issue at scale. And they've since signed up 30% of the global apparel and footwear marketplace, including competitors like Nike, Adidas, and Puma, and massive heavyweights like M&S and H&M and Walmart, who have then imposed it on their supply chain. And Walmart in particular has reduced their carbon footprint by 30% in the last year as a result.
My guest is Simon Mainwaring. And Simon, I mean, that's all very noble, but I want to come back to the companies moving into this way of thinking. And you used Nike as an example. I think what Nike has done is remarkable, particularly in such a short period of time. But the reason that they made these steps was because they got their wrists slapped for being, they were accused of using child labor, slave labor, et cetera, et cetera. So it wasn't until the PR was so bad that they actually had to do it. Will all companies have to face a PR challenge in order to do this, or will they step up of their own volition?
I think it's a bit of both in that, you know, left unchecked, all of these companies will take shortcuts to drive their bottom line. And that's partly, you know, an extension of human nature and our worst excesses. And sometimes it's a lack of regulation and oversight. But the difference today is, as we see from everything from WikiLeaks through to the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, consumers have social media. And they're informed more than ever thanks to the internet, and they're more capable of sharing that information thanks to social media, so that pushback, that consumer slap of the wrist, is happening faster and on a larger scale, and the consumers are starting to flex their muscles. I mean, if you look at Occupy Wall Street and how that took courage from what happened in Egypt and Libya and Yemen and all around the, you know, the Arab world and so on, consumers and citizens are waking up and saying, this is not the world I want to live in. Where's the root cause? Yes, it's government. Yes, it's corporate practices. Yes, it's corporate America. And if you want us to support you and vote for you every day in the shopping aisle with our purchasing power, we want you to be more socially responsible. And if not, we will use these new channels to be heard.
All right. Now, Simon, is it just the fact that we now have social media? What has really made the We First mindset possible today where it wasn't possible a decade ago?
There were two things that, you know, led to this sort of, you know, this is my expression of it, but it's obviously something that we see in many different ways. The reality that we're addressing is that we now live in an intimately connected and mutually dependent global community. If I learned anything from 2008, it was that what happens on Wall Street affects Main Street, affects our jobs, our healthcare, our homes, our hopes. It affects banks in Iceland. It affects the drachma and, you know, Greece. And, you know, the EU, and then it affects stock markets in the Middle East. And in the same way, we are also connected at the same time through social media, and we can tweet to each other in real time to somebody in China or Russia or Brazil. So suddenly, I think the world woke up and said, what happens here affects people on the other side of the world and vice versa, in which case we're in it together. And that's why I frame the shift from me first to we first, because the problems are now of such a scale that we can only solve them together. But we kind of created them alone, individually, putting ourselves first. So I don't expect anybody to be less self-interested than before, but I hope that we can now redefine self-interest in a way that's appropriate to the reality of the world we live in. This is not the 1980s, 1990s, or 2000s. We're in a struggling global economy within a challenged environment, with limited resources, growing numbers of the poor, a disappearing middle class, in which case we all need to work together in new ways to get out of this situation.
My guest is Simon Mainwaring, author of the book We First, How Brands, Consumers Use Social Media to Build a Better World. And Simon, what I hear you saying with the two things, the first, the interconnected world, which I think every generation sees how we're now interconnected, but the social media, are we starting to see a divide along age lines, along technology lines, between those who use social media, those who don't use social media? Is this the We First movement primarily a movement of the young?
I actually would, you know, my gut reaction would be to agree, Bill, and think it would be, but it's surprising that, you know, the number one demographic that you play social games like Angry Birds are women 34 to 50. So that's surprising. And, you know, the baby boomer generation have time and some disposable income, and you know, they spend a lot of time online now. So I actually see the difference in the sort of different silos, in the sense that I believe brands are embracing this more effectively than a lot of advertising agencies. So I see it industry by industry, and I see some companies and some industries really protecting their profit centers of the past and their media plans of the past and taking a defensive posture, while others are going, wow, we're now in full entrepreneur mode. How do we restructure ourselves? How do we engage and involve our community so they become brand ambassadors and build our business with us? And I think we are at one of those periods of creative destruction where a lot of companies will fall by the wayside, and we just saw that happen with Borders, you know, a few weeks ago. And look at the pushback with Netflix, and look at Bank of America dropping its debit card charge in the last few days. We are now entering an era of dialogue between brands and customers. And those companies that embrace that and see that social responsibility is a very powerful driver in success in these terms, they will be the champ. They will be the, you know, success stories of tomorrow.
My guest is Simon Mainwaring, author of We First, one of Amazon's best business picks for the year 2011. Simon, what do you want readers to take away from reading We First?
I think I'd like them to take away a couple of things. One is that we are all liable here. We all have a shared responsibility as consumers or customers in the way we consume, in how we treat the environment. And yes, as CEOs and shareholders, we all need to put on our hats as stakeholders in society and say, how are we going to fix this together? Secondly, we should be incredibly excited, because any period of sort of creative destruction like this is also one of amazing opportunities for those who can sort of tolerate risk and be entrepreneurial enough to take advantage of it. And thirdly, I think if we want to improve the quality of our lives and the lives of so many people around this country, which is so difficult right now, we have no choice. We have to wake up now. And we're either going to wake up now or at a point of such crisis that there is almost no return. And that would be a tragedy, because I think we're aware enough to embrace it now.
Simon, if people like what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Firstly, if they're interested in the book, they can go to WeFirstBook.com, WeFirstBook.com, or Amazon. And also, if they're interested in how they bring their brand message to life in a way that will resonate with their customers, if they can get, how do they get their message right so they can build a community that builds their business with them, and then how do they use social media tactics and strategies to build their business and continue to keep the community alive, I would direct them to WeFirstSeminar.com. So WeFirstSeminar.com. It's actually some training I'm doing here in Los Angeles, which is very close for your listeners. And one other thing I'd add about that is this training is very practical, in that you'll come out the other side of 2 days with a social branding blueprint that you can act on, plus every attendee gets an extra ticket to give to their favorite nonprofit for free, so that we can help them become better storytellers and better marketers, so that we can support their very important work. So just by coming to the seminar, you'll bring your business into the reality that we find business in today, plus you'll be able to support a nonprofit yourself. So I'd love you to go to WeFirstSeminar.com.
WeFirstSeminar.com. Simon, it has been a delight. Thank you for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.